3 years ago, I came here as a participant, and now I can stand up here and talk to you. It feels like a grand promotion, and it makes me a bit nervous, I must confess. So, these are two of the ministers. They're still alive. that I worked for. What works for your novel works for your speech, or does it? Well, that's the $1 million question of this talk. What can a fiction writer learn from a speechwriter and vice versa, especially when they are the same person? What's the nexus between the two? Let's see if I can make this work as well. Speechwriters are often used as characters by fiction writers. That's all we know. And I know that many speechwriters are also aspiring authors. Let's do a show of hands here. Who in this audience is also writing creatively? Ah, look at that. Fiction, published or aspiring?
Published.
Okay, well, that's less hands, but still. The aspiration is there. Before I start, these are strange times to be talking about the nexus between fiction and nonfiction. We live in an era of alternative facts, misleading slogans, fiction posing as fact, or scientific truths being waved off as just another opinion. The lines between fact and fiction seems to have dangerously blurred. So at the outset, let me make very clear, because I don't want to create any misunderstandings, that speeches and novels, in my view, should live on separate planets with clear boundaries between them. I think I had an image there. Yeah. Speeches are fed by reality while novels are the product of our imagination. Of course, you can and should use storytelling techniques to enhance the main arguments of your speech. But please stay out of the realm of fiction. Do not cross that line. Why? Well, if you do cross that line, you're treading dangerous waters. You're making your speaker extremely vulnerable to the point that they may have to resign. I don't know if you know these guys. This is my prime minister. This is one of the speakers I wrote for. No misunderstandings. It was not because of something I did as a speechwriter. It was something he did in his life previously to becoming a minister of foreign affairs. He had said something about a meeting in a dacha where Putin was supposed to be, and he wanted to make the point that Russia was a danger. He could have done that in many other ways, but he said something like, when I was present at this dacha with Putin, I heard him say, and he wasn't even there. He had to resign, and this is the moment I crafted his resignation speech, which was a very difficult but interesting thing to do. So don't cross the line. Okay, now that I have that off my chest, let me go into the subject. I'd like to tell you what I discovered while writing 200 plus speeches, two novels, and many, many short stories. And I would like to make that a personal story, not too theoretical, but I will give you a formula at the end. So, what did I do to deserve this opportunity to stand here today? Speechwriter, 5 different ministers, setting up workshops, teaching about speechwriting in the Netherlands and also abroad, and then these works of fiction, mostly in Dutch, I must say. My fiction is in Dutch. A strange combination of things, and then you end up with, this is my prime minister again. Here, he has these books here. These two lower books are my novels. I don't know if you read them, but it's not, and I like this one too. Yeah. And then Miracle. Okay. Okay, I'm very proud of these. But quite frankly, speechwriting was a relatively late discovery for me. To put things in order, I was a novel writer before I became a speechwriter, and before that, I was an academic and a civil servant, more specifically, a diplomat. A diplomat, we all know how these people talk. And indeed, in this capacity, I produced countless boring and fuzzy texts that kept everyone equally unhappy, as the saying goes, or even worse, sleeping like a fairy. In the ministry, we had no professional speech writers for a long time. As diplomats, we were supposed to be able to write speeches for ourselves and for the ministers. And of course, most of us couldn't. As a result, our ministers were reading out memoranda that had little to do with speech writing. And I would probably still be producing these unintelligible monstrosities if I hadn't noticed that this civil servant diplomat way of writing started to harm other aspirations I secretly had. Literary writing. Yes, I was one of these aspiring authors, and I was not the only one. As research has shown, 1 million other Dutch people are aspiring writers. So, with these 999,999 others, I used most of my spare time to develop stories and plots that I hoped would one day turn into a real novel, published by a real publishing house, reviewed by serious newspapers, maybe become bestsellers. I wrote thousands of kilometers of texts, short stories, long stories, and in my head, they were always grand. But when putting them on paper, there was always a point where I got stuck. Sometimes after page 100, sometimes after page 5, sometimes as early as after the first seemingly very promising sentences. But I was young and kept going. I didn't believe in writer's block. I believed writing was a talent, not a skill. Why did my stories collapse then? I didn't quite understand. And today I would shout at my younger self, because writing is a skill, you moron. It is not something you are born with, it is something you can learn. And what I would also tell myself is this, not only do you have a lot to learn, Pauline Gené, you also have a lot to unlearn. All that diplomat civil servant stuff, this habit to duck the question, to put off the real issues until last, something diplomats are all used to. But I am getting ahead of myself. I kept writing, the stuck points kept coming. So I enrolled in a creative writing program, the only one we had at the time in the Netherlands, a full MA. I was working full time and I had a small child, so it was a bit challenging sometimes, but rewarding. Talent or not, the program showed me the complexity of the skill. We worked on poetry and prose, but most importantly, I find, we did writing for theater and we developed screenplays. If you ever get the opportunity to work on those, please do, because you learn a lot from them about narrative structure. And that's where I came to understand the science behind a good story. What it is that keeps one story going and another fall flat. I came to understand the importance of narrative structures, an invisible skeleton that allows you to package your ideas in thousands and thousands of words for the reader to unpack, the unmissable foundation of your story. And I learned that without that skeleton, your story will inevitably collapse. In a way, a story is like a bike. You've got to keep it moving or it will fall down. But how? Riding a bike, we know, just move your legs. But how do we keep a story moving? Oh no, now she's going to talk about plots. I do not particularly like the obvious Hollywood plots, because when you've seen one, you've seen them all. But we shouldn't really not dismiss them either, because we can learn a lot from them as a creative writer. And some of these lessons and elements are also valid for a speechwriter to think about. Because, let's face it, our main goal as a speechwriter and as a novelist is, in essence, quite the same. Grab your audience by the throat. Get their attention and keep it. Get them to move to the edge of their seats. Make them want to turn that page and read on. Better even, give them no other option than to listen or turn that next page. My two novels are very different. The first is an historical novel about an old German retired teacher who believes he has an intelligent wonder horse. The second is about a hostage taking. Both books took me years to write, and in the process I learned some things about many aspects and literary elements. Slide. Of course, here we don't have time for all of them, and not of all of these are relevant for speech writing. And there's even one that I think is not relevant for us, and that's dialogue. You may differ. In what follows, I will talk about just two, conflict and character. Oh, then I have this slide here that sort of shouldn't be here, but in earlier talks, I talked about the differences and parallels between fiction writing and speech writing. And I came to these differences and parallels, but you can look at this, but I'm actually not going to go into it. We can talk about it during the break. Because I want to concentrate on conflict and character and what it is we as speechwriters can learn from those two. In a story, conflict is essential. Without it, no story. And please understand, conflict is not necessarily a fight or a war. It can also be about raising the stakes, about inserting an unsolvable dilemma. In fact, it has to do with establishing urgency. Cinderella loves the prince, the feeling is mutual, they live happily ever after. Now that is not a story. There's absolutely no conflict there. This fairy tale only becomes a story because our heroine is given a number of obstacles to overcome. A hateful stepmother, ugly sisters preventing her to go to the ball, then having to leave the ball at 12 p.m. sharp. And then when finally the prince comes along to find her, she's cornered into the kitchen. Cherish these obstacles, you need them. Fuel the conflict. And this is something I think you have to learn as a novelist, especially when you're a diplomat, I must say, because diplomats, most even than most people, when they see a conflict, they try to solve it and make it go away. Peace, man. Well, as a writer, be it of speeches or stories, you need to develop exactly the opposite tendencies. If you detect just a fraction of what could one day become a conflict or a dilemma, jump on it. Try to stir it up to the max. It is oxygen to your story. It is what grabs people's attention. In stories, a conflict often fits in a relatively easy diagram. This is my formula. A wants B, but alas, C prevents him from achieving that goal. Conflict. Let's see if you can come up with some examples here in the room other than Cinderella. Can you be creative about it? You want lunch, but U is A, lunch is B, but you have to politely listen to me. C. Anyone want to give it a try? No? Okay, you want lunch. And then as a writer, you have to be ruthless. As Graham Greene seemingly once remarked, every writer has to have a pin of steel in his heart. So that means don't give the guy what he wants. Don't give him the girl, give him obstacles instead. And don't give him just one wish, give him conflicting wishes. that make it even more complex, a catch-22. And when you let him fail when it's most painful, just before the finish. Worse even, let him subconsciously organize his own failings, internal conflict. Yes, we have to be ruthless. How does this all relate to my own two books, just to illustrate it? Old Man, A. Wants recognition for his Wonder Horse, B. It is him again. But alas, academia, C, is conspiring against him. At least that's the way he sees it. Building the conflict in the second novel seems simple. There's obviously conflict in this picture, but in fact it was much harder because it was a layered one. Of course, this lady, her name in my story is Ava, wants B, her freedom, but alas, she's kept hostage by rebels, C. But in the deeper layers of the story lies a more difficult conflict. I'm just telling you this because it's in Dutch and you can read it anyway, so it's not a spoiler. She wants, Ava, the lady, A, wants to get a message of love across to her estranged lover, B. But alas, she will probably die, C. And then there was this third conflict. It's a bit complicated, maybe. A, she wants to know if she did the right thing by B, not telling him what she knew about his ancestry, but now doubts C, if she had that right and if it was all worth it. A triple layered plot. How does this all relate to speeches, you may wonder? Well, of course, it is different. But in my view, conflict as a narrative concept is about keeping the reader at the edge of their seats at all time. Nothing more, nothing less. It's simple, if all goes too well, too soon, your audience will fall asleep. We have to get and keep him on her or her emotionally engaged. In every scene, in every chapter, and in the novel in its entirety. In novels and plays, there is this one specific moment when the grabbing of the audience's attention definitely happens, and then there's no returning. It's mostly towards one third or fourth of the story. The conflict has been outlined, all the characters have been introduced, and we now know what is at stake, but we do not yet see the solution. We call this moment the metorical moment, and as a writer, we build towards it. In a speech, how do we get there? Two things. It's different, but still. Firstly, by reveling in the beauty of the dilemma. Behind every policy, there are dilemmas. Don't make it go away, expose it. By expressly confessing to the doubts and to the changes of heart, by describing all the difficulties encountered or still to be expected, by not just preaching to the converted, but by outlining all the opposing views. Describe them in earnest, take them seriously, and then demolish them. It can be a powerful driving force of your argument and also a valuable check to know if your own logic is indeed right. In short, by creating a maximum of contrast, don't avoid it, make use of it. And secondly, and I think that's most importantly, by raising the stakes for your audience. Because there is still, with all this nice contrast, the risk that the listener could shrug their shoulders and go, well, what do I care? And this is the essence, because the audience has to be convinced that this whole thing has something to do with them. They have to feel the urgency for their own lives. You have to make it about them. It's also their problem. And that's not always easy, especially when you write about, I talked to people yesterday, abstract issues like the development goals or the decent work agenda or my own last speech, the applicability of international law in cyberspace. But most of the time, if you try, you can make it work. And most of the time, there is an angle. Now, what may help here is if you can fit that effort, that the search for that angle, in my earlier scheme, and I've adapted it especially for speechwriters today. Oh, if this works, yeah. Remember how it was? A wants B, but alas, C prevents him from achieving that goal. And I am here to tell you that it is not impossible. Yes, there are obstacles, but together we are going to clear them. If you can manage to describe the issue at hand with the help of this very simplistic format, where A is any member of your audience, B is something we all want or should want, and C is something that, as a consequence, we should all start to work on and to worry about, then the speaker, and thus the speechwriter, has us by the throat. Example, very fast. We all, A, want our children to have better lives, B, than we did, don't we? But alas, with C, the present education system that will not be feasible for your children and your children's children. In fact, your grandchildren will be the first generation since 1900 who are worse off than their parents. Obstacles. Should we allow this to happen? Of course not. Vote for me to make sure investment in education will be tripled. Very simple, but this is the way it could be. Another one about flexibilization of the labor market. We all want, you all want, a decent job, A, B, that pays the family bills and gives meaning to our life. Cleaner, teacher, policeman, everyone deserves that. It used to be that way, not only in their personal interest, but they also keep the country going. We all benefit from what they do. Obstacles. But alas, the present trends in the labor market, C, make this a distant dream for more and more categories of workers with impacts not only on their lives, but also on the society as a whole. A grim outlook. To prevent this from happening, the government will need to put a halt to further trends of flexibilizing the labor market. Vote for me to make sure this trend is reversed. Okay, these are just examples that I'm giving on the top of my head, but you will all do much better. And it may not always work, but I'm just offering this as an additional tool to the many other useful tools that I also use, like Monroe's Motivated Sequence and others. So that's what I wanted to say about conflict. How am I doing on time? Because I want to say some things on character as well. Very briefly, character. As a novelist, you are a psychiatrist. You have to know what deep down is driving your main character, deepest wish, even if the character himself doesn't seem to know. At some point, you have to be able to stand in front of your character with a microphone and ask this question: what is it you really want? That's what I did after months and weeks and years of work on these novels. And they replied, I want this horse to make good on the recognition my dad withheld from me all my life. I want to find a way to let my ex-lover know I love him, even if I die on this mountain. It sounds very simple, but it took me months of work and research to get them in this simplified form. Well, now, what is it you really want? I think this is also the most important question for speechwriters. You ask the question to the people who provide you with your input, the experts who want you to write that speech. What do we really want to achieve? You are the therapist of not only your speaker and the audience, but most importantly, you are the therapist of the policy itself. what is it we really want to achieve with this policy, with this speech at this moment for this audience? It's a seemingly simple question, but surprisingly you will find that often a sound answer is lacking. Don't let that put you off. Keep asking these basic questions to your speakers and to the policy people. Because what is it we want to achieve here? I hope I've been able to offer you a glimpse of another useful additional tool to get us to these great speeches that give those answers. Speeches that cut deep and aim at the heart. Thank you.